Welcome to a special edition of Profiles in Risk. I have not hosted an episode of Profiles for, I don't know, years, and I haven't been on an episode for at least 10 months, maybe more.
Today, welcome back.
Thank you. This is really weird. Today, I am your host, Tony Cañas, and I have a very special guest. You might potentially have seen him in the past. This is Nick Lamparelli, who usually hosts. So this is a special edition. Basically, I am leaving on vacation tomorrow, and I've been trying to get Nick down for us to look at this Lemonade transparency thing, since Lemonade has been a big part of our history. So what we're going to do today, basically, Nick, I won't give you any time to introduce yourself, since everybody knows who you are.
Who am I? What am I doing here?
Well, other than the fact that Nick's going a little senile.
Before we continue to get into that part of it, this episode of Profiles and Risk is sponsored by my new Patagonia vest from Surefly. Thank you, Brian Padgett. Much appreciated. Upping the stakes of the InsurTech gifts. Yeah, look at this thing.
Patagonia brand, that is really nice.
Yeah.
Who was it, Brian?
Brian Padgett.
Where's mine? I can send you my address. So that looks really nice. Thank you to,
yes,
to Surefly or Surefly. So today, basically, what we're gonna do is just discuss the latest Lemonade Transparency Chronicle, and I'm a bit of a fan, to be honest. I've always been a bit of a fan. I'm a bit of a closet fan, and you've always been a bit of a doubter of the Lemonade way. You haven't come around yet to the fact that it's Lemonade's planet, we just live there. So I kind of want to go through it and tell you why I'm excited, and you tell me why I'm wrong. Like, what is it that I'm misreading? How does that sound?
Well, I think there's a misunderstanding about my feelings towards them, so to speak. So, listen, is Lemonade making an impact on how insurance companies should deal with customers? Yes.
And that's a good thing.
It's a good thing. Yeah. They're bringing that part. So these, you know, tech savvy entrepreneurs from Lemonade who are coming into this new industry, don't know very much about insurance, recognized immediately, like, hey, wait a second, the way the carrier policyholder relationship is broken, we are going to fix that. Great. They're raising the bar. Again, get to the app, raising the bar. You know, now you see a lot of copycats raising the bar. So, you know, hats off
that is
to
good
them.
For all of us.
It's good for all of us. Absolutely. It basically comes down to one, I think they're a little naive. You know, they think we're the taxi industry and, you know, they're going to come in and kind of flip the card over. There's a little naivete there and how they perceive the economics of insurance to work. I'll give them a pass on that.
Okay.
Because I like the positive of, hey, we want to keep doing better. Fine. Keep doing better. Even if you're naive, keep doing better. I'm happy with that. The turnoff is the marketing.
That's where
I have the problem. That's where I'm the negative Nancy. I just everything from insurance companies are ripping people off, and they only make money when they deny claims. And hey, I had lost it when they said, hey, we're against guns, so we're going to make sure our policies don't cover guns. When in fact they had an ISO form, and their policies didn't cover guns because they copyrighted a ISO form. They licensed an ISO form.
Which
wasn't anything they did.
Like,
you know, it wasn't anything this they purposely did it, but it was a phony signaling of like, look how great we are in this world. And
yeah,
that's kind of when I had it, but they're absolutely raising the bar.
Good. And for any young insurance professionals that have found those, or young insured tech professionals, to be clear, the ISO policy, there's nothing wrong with using an ISO policy. Nope. Like the great nothing. Majority of the industry uses ISO policies in one way or another, right? Just don't pretend that a feature or a bug of the ISO policy was your idea in the last 10 days in response to something, right?
Yes.
And I agree completely about the thing about their marketing. Recently in New York City, I took this picture, and I don't know how well the camera will capture it. But
you could see. You might want to blow it up when you edit the video.
I'll include the actual picture for a little bit. But anyway, I was in a cab in New York City a couple weeks ago, and this other cab drove by me, and it had this lemonade ad on top, and it said lemonade insurance without 100 years of experience screwing you, and that just, oh my God, I wanted to, yeah, I just have no words. That really pisses me off, right? So I agree with you that the marketing is painful, it's very interesting.
They're going after the audience they want to go after, right? So they are, you know, they definitely want to be more urban, more. Mm-hmm. I hate the word millennial because I think we're beyond that now. Young.
Do you know who you're talking to?
No, but just that, you know, young professionals coming in are no longer millennial. We need a new word.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I just call them young professionals.
Nick, if they were born after 95, which are the ones that are graduating from college today, they are not millennials. They are Gen Zers.
Yeah.
I'm working on the book. I'll send you a copy as soon as it's ready.
I get all this stuff confused. I can't keep up with it. There's just there are too many young people.
Get off my lawn. I know.
Yes.
At your age, I can only imagine how scary it is.
They're screwing up everything. But okay, you know, but that's their audience, right? They're going after audience, urban. And frankly, I think tech savvy, probably, you know, digital native who would believe a stereotype that insurance companies are ripping people off.
Okay, most people who have never had a claim would believe that stereotype, right? Yeah. Like, yeah. Regardless of age, that no question about that. My mother-in-law would believe that stereotype.
So my issue is, okay, I can understand people believing that. That's fine. But wait a second. You're an insurance company. Explain to me how you're not ripping people off. Like,
What is it that you're doing differently? Yeah.
You're using an ISO form. You have reinsurers. So tell me which claims you would pay that other insurers have not paid. Tell me that. If you can answer that, now we can have a proper conversation. But don't say we're ripping the industry off, because you've been in claims. I have not been in claims, but I've been on the catastrophe side. And my experience has always been, on the catastrophe side, when they occur, it's we provide advice to our adjusters to adjust the claim, close it quickly. If there's a gray area, settle it on behalf of the policyholder, but move quickly. That's because you get thousands of claims. You can't allow them to mature over months and months and months. Close them as quickly as you can. I have not seen this ripping off thing.
I agree with you completely. Having spent 2 years in claims and having many friends that work in claims, I agree with you completely. My training in every company I was ever in and any friend that I've ever talked about claims, their training was always, we pay what we owe. We want to pay what we owe.
Yep.
The contract is complicated. Sometimes we don't owe it. And mistakes are made, as we documented, or as Bill Wilson documented in the wonderful book he wrote, published by Insurance Nerds, When Words Collide. Sometimes mistakes are made.
Ting.
Yeah. We'll include the link. But really, since I only have you for a little while today, what I really want to do is look at this Transparency Chronicle. So this was published on November 14, and today we are chatting on November 19. So we're chatting just a few days after it came out. So it's called 0 to 100 million in 3 years. 500% growth, 10% market share, ranked number one by consumers, our third anniversary Transparency Chronicles. So they start by talking about how running a startup is like dog years, and each year counts for 7. And you run your own startup, so I think you would probably agree.
Yeah, feels that way.
So by that logic, they're about 21 years old in dog years, right? And now they're all grown up. That's what they say. And they'd like to take stock and give an update. Okay. So the first part is just like kind of that their strategy hasn't changed, blah, blah, blah. I think that part is fine. I mean, they gave up the peer-to-peer part of the strategy. And
they gave that up a while ago.
Yeah. And they were open about that, and that's fine. I like this idea of how their strategy is very simple. It is delight the customer. It's a circle. Delight the customer, grow fast. More data gives you fast growth gives you data, and then the data gets fed into machine learning, and the thing learns and gets better over time. I think that makes sense. Who knows how true that is behind the curtain? I've never done machine learning.
It seems kind of wishy-washy. Frankly, it's tenants insurance. What are they learning?
They are doing a good amount of homeowners. We'll talk about that later on. So this part I think is fine. And they talk about how delighting customers has always been part of the strategy.
That's
right?
Fine. If you can do it, I don't think insurance is a product that is delightful, but I have no objection to anyone wanting to delight their customer. Have at it.
Absolutely. And they do a little bit of throwing dirt at competitors in general, but by saying that some of their first reviews that appeared online appeared to be written by a competitor. And this review is actually really funny because it does absolutely, it's very well chosen to show that it was written by somebody who knows insurance, right? So it has a lot of industry specific verbiage like policy jacket, right? Which is a very old fashioned word for the form. So anyway, that made me laugh, but whatever. Okay. So maybe an old State Farm agent went and gave them a bad review or something. Who knows, right? It was just kind of funny. But then they talk about how the real reviews started to come in and started to outweigh the fake ones, right? They've got a 4.8 rating on ClearSurance, and I think that's very good.
Yeah, fine. Good for them.
And not only that, let's see, they explain it later, I think. So they're like very high ranked in ClearSurance for renters in every state they're in, basically. And I think that's good. Now, of course, what we do have to be clear about is, and I am clear about this, is for the most part what customers are rating is how easy it was to get the policy and your pricing. Until they go through your claims, they really have no idea what that process is like, right? And they're giving you a rating before ever having a claim, right? So it's biased for every carrier. So they have those. That's fine. Blah, blah, blah. They mentioned that they're rated A+ and giving 4 stars by the Better Business Bureau.
That's searching.
Well, and
throwing up some spaghetti up against the wall. Better Business Bureau.
And are they skilled at reviewing insurance? Right? Probably not. Right?
No.
And then they have an Apple one, like an Apple logo, and it says Lemonade is the highest ranked insurance app, and one of the highest ranked apps ever. Although it doesn't tell me how high ranked in the overall app world, right? So there's billions of them. So if they're number 15 million, they would still be considered high rank. And the fact that they're the highest-ranked insurance app, I don't think that's surprising. Their UI is pretty amazing, right?
Not okay. Surprising. Good for them.
Okay, perfect. So then they dig into the grow fast piece, and this part is pretty interesting. So basically, they talk about how different tech companies, because of course they're a tech company, not an insurance company, according to them, right? Just like Uber's not a transportation company, according to them. So anyway, it talks about how the good tech companies take 4 years to go from a million to 10 million in recurring annual revenue. Better companies take 3 years. The best companies take 2 years, and they did it only 10 months. So when it comes to growth, it does appear that they're growing fast.
So there's a lot to unpack there.
Okay.
That is, it's kind of phony. again. Like, this is my issue. Okay, so if they're a tech company, then that $100 million is not revenue, right? It's $100 million of premium.
99% of that will get paid out in losses.
Their business model is they have the agency where mm-hmm. a commission gets paid to. That's the revenue. So it's not $100 million. I think they get 20, 25%. So it's 20 or 25 yeah. million would mm-hmm. be the really the tech piece of it, because the rest of its insurance has nothing to do with it. They're collecting commission. Yes. That's their business model. I'm an MGA. Mm-hmm. I'm an MGA, right? I don't count the amount of premium I sell to be mm-hmm. my revenue, right? It's my commission, right? It's how much is actually coming into me. So if they're going to use the $100 million number, then they need to be judged against insurance economics. If they want to be a tech company, they're not making $100 million in revenue. Now, it's still a really impressive feat. Let's not get that wrong. But again, as you and I both know, you want to sell $1 billion of insurance? That's pretty easy to do.
Exactly. So it's a marketing feat, but yes, exactly. If you have the budget to market and you have and you're not painful to buy from, just sell cheap.
And yes, you can sell, and they do. And their loss ratio shows that it's too cheap. So
loss ratios are outdated, Lamparelli. Nobody cares about loss ratios.
Right. I'm sure only if you're a tech. Only if you're a tech company. only if you're a tech company. And so I am curious about their actual intentions mm-hmm. of what it is that they're trying to do. My sense is they want the whole tech play and the marketing scheme is they need to be valued as a tech company. That is mm-hmm. the only way they can justify mm-hmm. a $2 billion valuation or a $1 billion valuation, or guess what? A $100 million valuation. It's the only way they could justify it. Because if they were just an insurance company, let's shave that by like 90%. So it is in their best interest. It is in their mm-hmm. investors' best interest to make sure that they are thought of purely as a tech play.
Oh, without question. But they're a legal carrier, right? They're filed as a legal carrier.
So what are they?
They are regulated as a legal carrier.
So what is the economic basis we're going to judge them on? And I can tell you, being in this business, mm-hmm. they're under insurance economics. They're not going to mm-hmm. be able to bust out of that. I'm sorry.
We should have had Barry join us to help figure out what exactly they are, because Barry doesn't believe that there is an insured that there's anything so as nothing yeah. is insured tech. I do agree with you. I do agree with your assessment that if the profitable piece is the agency piece that takes the top 20% as profit as real revenue, and the rest gets paid in losses basically or given to charity. Then they should be assessed on that 20%, not on the overall revenue. You're absolutely correct in that. Okay, so what I don't want to spend too much time on growth, because clearly they've done well in growth. We do agree on that. So they're gonna show the chart of their recurring revenue per quarter, and it definitely looks exponential, right? It definitely has the right exponential look, assuming they didn't mess with the axis, which the axes are not really.
No, it's right fine. There. I mean,
but yeah. So they had exponential growth.
That's the same curve I'm hoping my business takes. So
good.
Understood. That's fine.
So they compare their growth. How long it took them to reach 100 million in recurring revenue. They compared positively against other tech companies like Slack, Twilio, ServiceNow, Shopify, Coupa, Cornerstone, and Blackline. I was only familiar with Slack out of those, so I don't know who the other ones are, right? It's not Google. Okay. So anyway, that first part is all about growth. Then they talk about Google searches. And this is kind of interesting. Basically, they show the trend, what they called branded Google searches. So basically, when somebody searches for renter's insurance and they include the brand they're looking for, so those searches have exponentially increased for Lemonade compared to State Farm, Progressive, Allstate, and Liberty. Not surprising, they market themselves well, right?
That's fine.
People, yeah. So yeah. Let's just kind of run through that. Okay. So They focus a little bit on branded renters insurance searches in Texas. I'm guessing because they've just had good results to show from Texas. They don't show the rest of the states. So this part's interesting. The market share, right? So they're claiming that at the beginning they said 10% market share, right? And then as you dig a little bit, right, 10% market share among renters insurance in Texas, and they say somewhere here that there's other states, but they don't really name them, right? So it does kind of
it's not very transparent.
You think they're being modest and they're actually 10% in several states and they just don't want
Maybe there are. It doesn't affect my view of what they've accomplished and who they are. The renters market is not a very big insurance market.
Correct. And I don't think they talk about it in this Transparency Chronicle, but in the past they've talked about how most people who buy the renters insurance are previously didn't have renters insurance. And I think that's a really good thing for everybody, right? Bringing them into the market, getting them protected. So good for them.
No issue there. Yep.
Good for them. Okay. So here they get into the more interesting stuff where they're talking about how people, curmudgeons like Lamparelli, they don't name you by name in this part, but curmudgeons like Lamparelli think...
Get off my lawn.
Exactly. think that their growth in renters came at the expense of homeowners. But actually, they've been selling homeowners since launch, and they think of themselves as a multi-line carrier. And it says multi-line business. Of course, they don't say carrier because they're a tech company, not a carrier, although they're legally a carrier. So they say all too often they're thought of as renters insurance company, but really renters is just part of what they do. They are transparent about the fact that the overall renters market in the States is less than 10% of the overall homeowners market. So they know they have to go after homeowners. So in August 2018, they decided to right that wrong and started to give homeowners the love and focus they deserve. They deserve. And in the past 12 months, they've had over 500% year-on-year growth in sales in homeowners policies. And while doing that, their cost of acquisition per homeowner policy has dropped 70%. So those sound like very impressive numbers.
It could be. Whenever you see a percentage, I need to know what the basis is. So 500%, did they go from 1 to 5?
Yeah.
Right?
That is true. And I don't think that they show that. So they don't show their work, so to speak.
Okay. So, but, again, it gets into, you know, the transparency articles is I'm being sold a message.
Mm-hmm.
It's less about transparency and more about they want to start crafting the message of like, hey, we're a homeowners company. It's like, well,
this is good
if you want to be transparent,
absolutely.
I would like to know what percentage of premium is renters insurance and what percent is homeowners. To me, they're going into a stiff headwind when it comes to homeowners. They're not going to make a big deal, and I don't think they want to really talk about that because that's going to affect the potential IPO or whatever. But
Nick, if I'm a great renters carrier, homeowners is the same thing. What's the difference?
Because they don't have an S&P rating or an AM Best rating.
Okay.
So a lender's never going to accept it.
Lenders.
The vast majority of homeowners in the country have some sort of lender that will require an AM Best rating. So they really can't make a dent in that market until that changes. You need a massive... let's put it this way. It's really expensive to get the AM Best rating. They're likely not capitalized to do that. And they've already been using venture funding to capitalize the carrier part of it. That's a really expensive way to capitalize your insurance. Because the money's just sitting in treasury bonds. You're using venture money.
Yeah.
And putting it into treasury bonds. It does not make any sense. There's a natural conflict here where I think, they're going to come in and they're going to say, well, let's just do that. And there are going to be all sorts of headwinds that are going to prevent them from doing that. Tenants is easy, right? I mean, listen, doing anything that they've done is not easy. Tenants insurance is a lot easier than homeowners. Smaller per risk limits, different elements of aggregation, predominantly contents driven losses. Not as susceptible to catastrophic losses.
We haven't even touched on catastrophe, which is your real giant expertise.
Yeah.
So basically what I'm getting from you is you think that they're talking about homeowners so that when they IPO or when they get bought out by somebody, they can use the much larger homeowners market to talk about where this can go.
I think they mentioned that in the article. I think their vision is all property, including auto.
Oh, I read this a few days ago.
No, their vision is to do everything, and that's where I think they're naive, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you can't just step into auto. You can make the process as simple as possible, but when you step into auto, you're stepping into super highly regulated rates. In some states, the state set the rates, so they're not going to get they're not going to get any price benefit from that. And
they can partner with Root.
Whatever it is they do, it's not going to be easy. And auto is a cash game. Auto is a volume game. Geico, Berkshire Hathaway is playing this as a volume game because the margins are so thin. They're not going to be able to get a 20-25% commission.
So,
on auto. Given they that can't they don't do the charity thing with auto.
So given that they don't have an AM Best rating and that it'd be hard for somebody who has a lender to use them for homeowners, are you impressed at all that in 15 months they've gone from 5% of new sales being homeowners to 35% being homeowners? That's the chart that they show.
35% of what? It's the basis.
New
premium?
Sales, 35
premium.
Oh, that's a good point.
Because
I don't believe it specifies. Yes.
It's probably premium, and I would be less impressed. If it was 35% of total policy count, I'm sorry. If it was 35% of policy count, I would be impressed. It's 35% of premium, I'm not impressed because homeowners is going to be magnitudes bigger. So they only have to sell one homeowner's policy for every five renter's policy to kind of equalize that. Because I think their renter's policy go for like $65, $80. Homeowner's policy is going to be four or $500 for a homeowner's policy. So... Okay.
By the way, I was actually getting a limited quote right before we spoke, and mine's not that cheap. Mine's $284 a year, and that's before I finished, before I added my electronics and stuff. So not that cheap. I haven't compared it with what I'm paying right now, and I can't move it anyway because I've got my umbrella and my auto all the same big carrier, right?
Okay,
so I won't move it myself.
So think of that. Think of that dynamic. How many people are like you in that particular regard where you're getting better economics because your auto and your umbrella are all together?
It's a headwind that they're
running into.
The majority of what I would call the middle market personal line space, right? Right. Maybe homeowners, maybe apartment owners, but they do need an umbrella and they do have a car. I would say that right. That's where the traditional carriers have made hay, is those package policies. So you're right. They don't specifically say whether that 35% is sale or number of policies. So that makes a big difference. I agree completely. And also they talk about how. They're very happy that some of that homeowner growth is renters that graduated into buying homes. That makes sense, especially in the strong economy we're in right now. Good for you. Okay. They share that the average premium of a homeowner is six times that of a renter, which
What I said.
Makes sense. Okay. 9.1% of their condo owners. It's very interesting. So it looks like they're for some reason they switched from homeowners to specific condo. 9.1% of their homeowners started as renters. Of their condo owners started as renters. Okay, I don't know if that means anything. Okay, cool. Geographic expansion. They went into Europe in June, and I don't want to spend too much time in Europe because I'm not an expert in that market in any way, shape, or form. I did think it was really weird that they went into Europe because you're only in a few states here, right? So why are you going into Europe so early? I heard John Peters speak at a conference at some point this year, and I can't tell you which one because I have been at many this year. And he talked about how in Europe, in Germany, where they went into, you can change rates like that. Like you literally go like, brook change. That's it. No filing, no anything. You just change it, and that's just how it works. So it allows them to experiment in an incredible amount compared to the U.S. where it's so heavily regulated. But I do think that it's silly to go into Europe when you're just getting started in the U.S. What do you think about them going into Europe?
Same as you. I don't understand it.
Okay.
I think it's, you know, you get the benefit of diversification if you can write some policies there. But going into Germany is another carrier with another amount of capital that's required to support that business separate from your U.S. licensed carrier. And so there's a lot of expensive venture money just supporting these businesses that are not generating a ton of return.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand it. I don't want to come out and say it's stupid. It's a stupid move. Cause that maybe I'm wrong on that, but it does not smell right. I just think from a financing, the financing and the economics around that just do not seem to support anything in regards to that. So there must be another part to the story that we don't know about.
It seems 5 to 10 years too early
They haven't even done all those states in the U.S.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Exactly. It's very weird.
And if the point is like, okay, well, you know, they haven't gotten to Florida yet. So, and I understand why. Everybody understands why. Okay.
The toughest market, yes. Homeowners market in the country. Yeah.
So maybe they've saturated the heavy urban areas. Right. And maybe it's a sign that their market is the urban professional. Right. But if that's the case, they're niching down to something that I don't think they can then go back up. Cause if that was their plan, they would go to North Dakota. I rent my house. I was trying to get a quote for Lemonade, and they don't write here. No one writes here, but they don't as well. So I just don't understand the move.
So I think Nick just explained that he lives in North Dakota, which is a little weird because that's not where he lives.
I mean, New Hampshire.
Okay. Gotcha. I thought that was pretty funny. Okay. So you know what? You're making a good point. Maybe what they've realized, or maybe the goal has always been to simply focus on the affluent urban consumer and do that in an almost worldwide basis or as opposed to world. And if that's the case, it'll be a great business. It'll be hard to run, but it'll be a great business. But it's not going to have a huge effect here in the U.S. because the U.S. is not... this is not Singapore, right? Like we have a lot of areas and a lot of the population lives outside of highly concentrated areas. So it would be a fairly minor effect unless you happen to live in a top 10 city within the country.
I'm sure they have global aspirations. I admire that. But for an insurance business, it's super expensive.
So hard. Yes. So hard. So then they talk about how the more data they bring by bringing in new clients, the better the machine learns. And that, my understanding of machine learning is that it is what it is. The bigger your big data, the more that your system can learn and get better by it. And so they talked about how for every dollar that they earned in the first quarter of 2017, so very early in their history, they paid out $3.68 in claims, right? 368% loss ratio, which is essentially burning money, right? 368 is essentially burning money. But that because the machine is learning and getting better, Now it's dropped steadily, and now 2019 third quarter loss ratio is 78%. 78% sounds fantastic to me. So they're profitable now, based
No,
on
I don't
this.
think so.
No? So what am I missing here? Because I thought loss ratio under 100 and you're profitable.
No, combined ratio.
Oh, okay. So
Yeah,
the
so still other
oh,
expenses.
okay. So do they share their expense ratio?
I think they pay themselves 25%.
Yeah, at the very top, which is more than agents make, by the way.
Yeah.
It's 20 or 25, I can't remember, but it's at the very top. Yeah. So they're making a big deal of the loss ratio. So I don't know enough about renters. If you're State Farm renters and you're running 78% loss ratio, is that a good year or a bad year?
That's not good.
Okay, so they're still not
No,
profitable.
I think
Okay.
for I'm hypothesizing here. I don't know the renters
We don't
market
have the
enough,
data
but I
in
know
front
the
of us, yeah.
homeowners market. I know the property insurance market, and I could never pitch to a reinsurer, to a carrier, that we were going to produce a 70% loss ratio. It would never fly. They would never go with it.
Okay.
It's too high.
Okay. So
So to give you an
interestingly,
idea of what would be acceptable,
Okay.
you need to be in the 40s.
Really?
You need to be in the 40s, because now you need to add your expenses on top of that, right? And you need to have some sort of elbow room,
Okay.
because you don't want the combined ratio to be even in the 90s. Lemonade can't afford to have the combined ratio in the 90s. That is not a big enough return to justify all of the capital that's sitting in their carrier. It needs to be in the 80s. Now they're getting
So
some margin. Now they're delivering some cash.
interestingly, they mention here, they say notably, the equivalent loss ratio among the top 20 insurers in the US averaged 82.34 last year, and they actually source S&P Global. So when I click on the link, it brings me to an image, a PNG, not the whole article at S&P Global, SNL.com, which I'd have to dig into it to see exactly which column they averaged, but so I'll do a little research on that. But anyway, so they're claiming that they're already better in loss ratio than the top 20 insurers in the U.S. We'll have somebody dig
Yeah,
into that. It probably won't be me, but you don't buy it.
I don't buy it.
Okay.
I
Okay.
don't.
So so
I
they this
and
they.
and I don't I don't buy that it was the machine learning that did
Okay. So.
It was they got and I wrote this in the article, which thankfully they copied to
We're about to talk about that, yeah.
give us proper credit for that. I said law of large numbers would come to rescue them. It always does. Right, you're spreading it. You're spreading the risk out, collecting premium from different areas of the country. So they have California, New York covered, the middle in Illinois. They do Texas. They got all of the areas covered. It's really spread out. Your per risk, your per event occurrence, PML plateaus there. So the more business you bring in, it doesn't really affect your aggregate exposure. Kind of plateaus off. So the law of large numbers came and rescued them. They're just diversification rescued them. I don't think there's any machine learning. It's tenants insurance. What are we talking about? Like
hold on.
fraud? Okay. You eliminated some claims that were, fraudulent, but somehow those people are still making it into your policy list.
So they claim here that giant decrease in loss ratio in 2.5 years they've done without material price increases, which and they link to an old blog that we don't have time to review right now, and they say it's a neat trick, and not many industry observers believe it could be done, and that's where they have a two they have a reference to two old articles, one by the Insurance Post. And one by us, your famous Lemonade article, one of our very popular articles. They don't actually include the link, so they do have our logo, and they spelled your name right, which is good. That sent us a good bunch of traffic. So thank you, Lemonade. Keep talking about us. We love you when you do that. Hopefully, you love us when we talk about you too. Next time, include the link. That'd be really nice, so people don't have to Google it. People are lazy. You should know that because. you have a lot of analytics.
Well, it's because if they send the link, they'll see that it wasn't exactly how they're describing it. I wasn't get off of my lawn. It was, and even today, $65 is too cheap. Sorry. Like, you cannot run a business on that. And yours.
Well, tell you what, my quote is 23 a month, right? Yeah. 23 a month, 284 a year. So it's not $65. And
that's what it was.
Quote. Like this is, I don't think this is any cheaper than my current. I'll take a look, but I don't think it's any cheaper than my current. Okay. So let's see. We're kind of running out of time. So just kind of want to go fast here. They talk about how brokers and actuaries can be overwhelmed by big data, but bots and machines thrive on big data. So basically what they're saying is the more data, the more confused the traditional system is, and the better they'll do, right? And data is growing, so
that's probably true
for them.
That's so
I
probably
think it's true with brokers. I don't know if it's true with actuaries.
True. I mean, big data is more forward-looking. It doesn't really jive with actuarial science. Not that the actuaries couldn't. They were completely skilled enough if they wanted to kind of figure out what to do, but that's not their purview. Their purview is to take historical claims, historical exposures, figure out what the, kind of normalize all the historical data to project out into the future. It's not their game to take big data and just look at forward-looking information and just go with it. It doesn't really fit with actuarial science.
So they say here, seeing growth and risk both improve dramatically, as we have, flies in the face of insurance orthodoxy. But in the tech context, it makes sense. I don't know if that's true.
It's not true.
Is it against insurance? Okay, yeah.
That's not true.
Like my brain's going like,
Fast growth has been a problem in insurance, but growth has not been a problem. As a matter of fact.
And fast growth takes a while to catch up with you. They just might not have time yet, right?
Yeah, exactly. Fast growth is not that insurance companies haven't been able to do it. It's just that traditionally, when you grow really fast, one of two things is wrong, right? And it's predominantly you're charging too little. Mm-hmm. But the other could be you're paying your brokers unusual amounts of commission to push your product, right? But it's usually the price is too low. And mm-hmm. and you have adverse selection, and it always comes back to haunt you. I don't know how much of that's going to occur in tenants, but $65 is too cheap. $100 is too cheap. It doesn't make any sense. You can't run a business that way. And in your quote, I think truly says, it's indicative that they have had price increases. They had to. Or else they're just siphoning all of their losses down to their reinsurers, and there's only so long that's going to happen.
Yeah, I agree. And then they talk about how they kind of confess that at the early days, 100% of questions that came in were handled by people. So that's interesting because they didn't say that at the beginning, right? They kind of pretended that AI was doing everything. But AI, Maya is getting better. And AI Maya now handles 26% of questions. So, I mean, good for them.
Good. That's fine.
Yeah, my experience with AI Maya thus far, I'm halfway through my code, but thus far it's been good. I still need to ask her whether the stuff that I want to cover would be worldwide coverage and whether it would be replacement costs. And we'll see how well she answers those. So let's see what else. They make fun of the freakish State Farm attack ad.
Oh my God.
I like that ad. I think I'm the only human.
It's ridiculous. I never commented on it and I wanted to, but it's absolutely ridiculous. And it stuff like that and the gun thing, just, it's like, it's phony. I watched that ad. It's an auto insurance ad.
As bad as most of them, but not
yes.
the worst.
It wasn't a chatbot. It was a robot that was acting like a chatbot. Mm-hmm. It had no connection with Lemonade at all. Zero. zero connection with Lemonade.
I agree.
And they like they ran with it, and that is my biggest frustration with them. It's not what they're
really
doing.
Yeah, it's they're great at kidnapping the news cycle. They're great at news jacking.
Hype. It's hype. Yeah. That's why the articles don't believe the hype. They're just pumping hype out there, and I'm afraid it's going to get worse because, listen, I watched the Theranos documentary. I'm not saying that they're doing any of that stuff, but this, like, the hype is smells so phony that it's like I don't trust the messages that are coming out. This smells like some sort of cash out is coming out. Like, we want to get bought, or we want to IPO, we want to get the hell out of here before this house of cards collapses.
I've always thought that an acquisition play, maybe an IPO play, but yeah, I don't think that.
I like the tech. I like the underlying intention of we want to improve this particular process. Everything else is hype. And we're getting burned constantly now with Theranos, with WeWork, like these companies that are just like not profitable and they're built on a house of cards. And this one smells that way as well. Sorry.
Okay. And no problem. We're almost running out of time. I'm going to skip the whole Deutsche Telekom pink thing, whatever. That's not insurance.
Again,
that's
another one. Like, fine, but you're going to waste investor money to do a lawsuit.
Then they show up a whole bunch of numbers. And I mean, good for them. The numbers are fine. I'm not worried about most of them. There was one number I found interesting, which is, I believe you've kind of alluded or said that the charities would never actually see any money because they'll never be profitable. But apparently they've partnered with 92 charities and they've already given $846,849. So they've given $846,000 to charity through their give back.
Okay. So I'm still skeptical of it. I don't understand how you can have a loss ratio greater than 100% and somehow find money to give to charities. But I was very specific in my article. I don't see how that's possible. And to me, the charity angle loses its effectiveness if it is not recurring. So if they miss a payment, I think it's going to fizzle. So with 100%+ loss ratio, and early on, it was much, much worse than that. My guess is that they found the money for the charities. My guess, you know, I don't know how they did it.
They're just handing investor money to charities, basically. Just
shuffling things around. We have a 200, 300% loss ratio, but we need to give something to charities because it's our big marketing shtick. We can't not do it. So they found the money to do it.
And there's
I could be wrong.
Yeah, there's a link, and I haven't clicked on it, so they might explain in detail where the money came from or how it was calculated. But also the last number I'm interested in is 34,239 candidates applied for a job at Lemonade, and 242 of them were hired. So 242 out of 34,239. So they're claiming that they're running something like 0.7% acceptance rate when it comes to applicants. So my God, it's harder to get into Lemonade than it is to get into McKinsey. I'm on the staffing side, so I found that.
Yeah, I mean,
I'll share that
with
my people on the staffing side.
Sounds like vanity metrics.
Oh yeah. Definitely. And that's basically it. Those are the things that I wanted to talk about. And I want to get you out of here in time. I do have a meeting in 10 minutes, but I will give you the closing word here.
The air has to be cleared out again. Yes, I'm in the old curmudgeon. Fine. I like the tech. I like what they're doing there. I like the underlying intentions of, appropriately dealing with your customers and your prospects in a way that we're used to with like Amazon and these other companies. I get it. I like it. The marketing shtick seems phony, and it's very reminiscent of other companies that have burnt up. And I just do I think they're going to survive? Yeah, I think they're going to survive. If you put a gun to my head, I would say they will IPO, or there will be some sort of sellout to, you know, a carrier that wants to get into the space.
I'm guessing acquisition.
Yep. I think the partners, the founders, will exit with a ton of money.
Oh, yeah.
And then I think at some point down the road after they leave, we will never hear of the word Lemonade again. If you put a gun to my head.
Yeah. I've always thought acquisition, and my guess, and yeah, the partners, those who have equity will come out with a lot of money.
Yes.
And my guess is it'll get bought by a big carrier who wants their technology, and over time, I think of it like Saturn, right? So the little car company that will change GM, and then they just got swallowed by GM and eventually shut down and didn't change a thing, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of what I'm assuming is going to happen if they do get acquired,
that is exactly what's going to happen. Whoever acquires them is going to poison them. And that's the end of it.
That makes me very sad, because if my carrier that insures me acquired them and I ended up getting the great UI, I'd be very happy. But yeah, we both know that's it'd be really hard to do that.
Yeah.
So since this is your first time on Profiles, how can people connect to you, Nick? if they want to learn more about you.
You can find me on LinkedIn. And thank you so much for having me, Tony.
And on almost every other episode of Profiles in Risk.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You should do this more often.
I you know what? We really should, yes. You'll hear it here first. In 2020, there will be, I don't know, at least between 5 and 10 episodes with guests hosted by Tony. I am committing, publicly committing.
I know you can do it. Okay. I know you can do it.
I'm going to go ahead and stop the recording. Thank you very much for joining us, Nick.
Cheers.